my name is Peter Cinnamond, and you're listening to a podcast which is all about the Irish League. It was stalemate at Seaview this weekend as Glentoran and Crusaders wasted a number of glorious chances each to win what was probably the most full-blooded battle of the season so far in North Belfast. Carrick, meanwhile, chose trick over treat for their fans as they lose at home to what was the league's bottom side. And if there was a Halloween costume for future Irish League champions, I'm pretty sure it would come with a blue shirt right now, as Linfield spook the rest of the competition with 5 goals and currently sitting with 8 points at the top of the table. We'll be chatting all of this and more on this week's edition of Kicking Match. Going to be a fun week this week, I can just tell. So much stuff happening on the pitch as well as off it that we just need to get chatting about. Therefore, let's get down to business, shall we? Let's welcome in my Renfield for this week. He is a fellow Irish League podcaster, once of the parish of Flynets. Hello and welcome back, Mark McGuigan.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. People will not be able to see that you took a big swig out of your bandwagon team, a little cup that you have that has a little apple in the middle of it. It is your newfound love from the boys from County Armagh, Loughall. I feel like we could start there. How did you handle Windsor Park when your two beloved teams, Loughall and the Blues, faced off? Was your heart torn?
Not really, no, to be quite honest. You know, gotta look out for Loughall, gotta see what the story is down in County Armagh, but my loyalties lay in one blue camp on Saturday, and it was, of course, Linfield. So, yeah, there was no split decision or nothing. It was just one-way traffic.
It's great to be a blue at the minute. There's no doubting that. But we will hit pause there and return to the big game, the main event game that happened over the weekend, and we will start at Seaview. Ends up being 1-1. It was a feisty affair on the pitch, plenty of news off it. I guess the thing that you're probably looking at come the end of the match is another situation where top six teams are dropping points while Linfield are winning, and everybody seems like they just can't get their motor running. If you're a Glentoran fan in particular, you'll think, how on earth did we not win this based on all the chances that they had in the first half? If you're Crusaders, you think we sat back and we were able to deal with all those chances, and then when we had our chance after being down to 10 men and Ben Kennedy has a penalty, they aren't able to put it away. That was just a bonkers game on Saturday afternoon.
So much going on, and I don't really think anybody that wasn't at the game will actually appreciate how much seems to have gone on in that game. You know, both teams seem to have so many chances. I think the Glens were very unlucky on Saturday by the sounds of it and what has gone on, even off the pitch. It's totally unlucky for the Glens. As you said, Peter, I'm rubbing my hands here because two of our main top six rivals drop points against each other, which is just absolutely brilliant for me. But I would say those two, there's only one side are really, really annoyed about that, and I would say it's the Glens. They've really missed out. But as you say, Cruz did miss that penalty. Poor penalty, wasn't it? I thought anyway. But
Mark, it was such a bad penalty, I had to go back and look at other Ben Kennedy highlights, because I was like, is he left-footed? Because that didn't look like he hit that with his strongest foot. I was going, no. Did he try and do a wee, oh, right-footed, hit it with the left, what am I like? No, he is left-footed. He usually thumps that ball into the back of the net, and for some reason, be it just the moment in time that it was, the pressure being on, but it was a poor hit, and McCary was able to be up to it and save it. And it was a big moment for him. It was an eventful day for him. And we'll get on to other contribution he made to the afternoon later. But look, the big misses include McCullough heading over, the junior one. I'm sure everybody has seen. It's probably not as easy to control as some people would think, but it's one of those where the ball comes in hard and low. He's rushing on to it. He's got the defender at his back. And if he hits it or gets any other type of connection, it's going to trickle in either side of the keeper. But somehow he just caught it at an angle where it went directly past the post and out. It was a howler of a miss when it comes to what was on the line in that game. And come the final whistle, it is one of the things that's remembered and not for any good reason.
Absolutely. You know, he's come into the league pretty much as an unknown last season, let's be quite honest. Like Glenn signed him, nobody was really sitting in fear of they've signed Junior. Oh no, what's gonna happen? He did him a really good turn last year, I think. I think he put in a really good shift, certainly towards the end of last year, putting in some big performances for them. Misses that one on Saturday. I think Donnelly actually had a really, really good chance. Jay Donnelly, that is, of course.
A really good game. He a guy, you know, when you chat to Glentoran fans, they kind of say Donnelly's either really hot or he's completely cold. And at the minute, the burner's up to 7 or 8 right now. He is cooking week on week.
He's not at that 100% where he was maybe 2, 3 years ago, where he was definitely the best striker in the league that season. You have to admit it. Him coming into form. Could that change the Glen's fortunes? I don't really know. I don't really know where their problems are going to lie. If he does come into form, it doesn't change a whole lot for me because it's leaky at the back. It's just not that solid, you know, big, strong core of, and of course, an in-form McLean and an in-form Wilson. Wilson does not look to be 100% for me at the minute. And of course, the fullback issue. How long could you talk about that fullback issue at the Oval? But Donny coming into form is only good for the Glens. We'll have to see what happens along those lines.
Junior is like a lightning rod for what this team is. It is either free flowing, looking great, who's going to stop them, or it's just off the boil inconsistency. This team is so inconsistent and you cannot blow hot and cold. I know that is pretty much the thing that's dragging down almost every team in this league right now, but Glentoran in particular, it goes from crisis to they really could have something here. And I say it's not a crisis, but when you look at their top six games this season, you know, we keep harping on about how Linfield weren't good against the top six last year. Glentoran have played six games against the top six, Crusaders being the double that they've played. They've drawn both games against the Crews. The only game they've got 3 points out of is that 1-0 win against the Reds. And as much as that seemed like a great victory at the time, they've also dropped points at Carrick and Dungannon, especially with this runaway freight train that is Linfield. They are going to have to go on an epic run to be in contention. I'm going to have to hope that somehow Linfield fall off the tracks. Europe is still a significant cherry that everybody's going for. And if we can shift it back to the Crews, this is a team who looked electric at the start of the season. They have been off the boil ever since. They've been getting the results despite the performances not being great. They were boisterous very much on Saturday by the return of Paul Heatley and Lecky. Those two players make that Crusaders team a lot better, and I'm sure they would have been boosted as well on the pitch by that goal scored by Philip Lawrie. There was never really going to be a situation where he was going to somehow recreate that magic season he had last year, but that felt vintage of last season with that goal charging into the box and slamming it home. Despite going down the 10 men, and we'll get to that red card, that somehow benefited Crusaders in the second half.
It certainly seems to anyway. The performances of Lecky and Heatley both looked much more like the Crusaders of old. You know, those two really were looked like they were rolling back the years, to be quite honest. Lecky, pretty decent header very early on. Heatley also scored a header, which was offside, of course. That one just about offside by the looks of it.
Paul Heatley, I know it was offside, but Paul Heatley strangely has scored a lot of headers in his career.
Shouldn't be scoring headers, no way. No way. And
No,
especially against
that
Luke
should not be
McCulloch.
allowed. That should count for
Especially
double.
against Luke McCulloch. Luke McCulloch should not be letting him in there, but he was got it obviously that that was offside. But I thought the two of them looked very, very sharp and certainly added a lot of life to that team. But you're 100% right about Philip Lawrie. That goal was just like last year. It was just like rolling back the year. I'm sure he's happy with it because it was an absolute stormer of a finish outside of the box. Really, really nice goal.
Let's go through some of the big talking points in this game. Red card, Josh Robertson just gets caught in between Jay Donnelly. He doesn't know which side he wants to be on, and he just decided he was on the wrong one, and his arms around him, and he pulled him back. There was a part of me that was thinking, well, there was maybe players either side of him, but look, He pulled back Donnelly from skirting to the right, and he would have been free as a bird and had the goal at his mercy. So a bit of a mindless red card, but as we often say on this podcast, he gave the referee the decision to make, and I can see why they decided it was time to show red. If you're a Glentoran fan, you're calling for that every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Oh, 100%. Like, if that's your team, you think it's a yellow, if it's against you, it's going to be the reddest red card ever. So I think that it was tight enough for Josh. I think he was just found on the wrong side of Jay Donnelly, and when the striker that speed and pace is running at you, just doesn't have the pace to chase him anymore. But so unlucky, just got caught up on his feet, and it was really unlucky for him. But I wouldn't be complaining if that was a red card against me. It was one of those ones.
Another big decision for the referee was awarding Crusaders the penalty deep into that second half. They've been down to 10 men. They're actually playing the ball pretty well around that Glentoran box, despite being down a man. The ball comes in, and it seems to be a handball from Wilson. Like, it's one of those things where I've looked back and looked back and looked back. The players are just screaming for it there in the box, which people always say is a giveaway, but I don't really think that really falls into the rules of who screams the loudest. But the referee saw what he saw, and we've talked about it already. An awful, awful penalty from Ben Kennedy. And you know, you talked there about, you know, Wilson and a few others perhaps not being 100%. A bit like Crusaders being brilliant at the start of the season, Ben Kennedy was one of the players that was leading that charge. He was the man that was right at the front, and he's had a few difficulties with injuries this season, and we haven't seen him going full burner since. He still has great skill and ability, but I don't think we're looking at a 100% Ben Kennedy at the minute either.
No, definitely not. Certainly doesn't look to be that player that was lighting up the league right at the very start of the season. Had an unbelievable start last season as well, before his injury, of course. I think that penalty nearly sums up the season for him. You know, everybody expects something, but they've got something else. It was maybe not on the radars of the Crews this year, but it's just really unfortunate. Everybody's missed a penalty in their career, I'm sure. But it was just at that time and that moment, as we said earlier on, he really needed to score that to get the Crews out of jail.
So 1-1, spoils are shared. Let's briefly touch on the other bits of news coming out of that game. Another awful injury for Bobby Burns of Glentoran. You know, he had a big injury last year that took him out. And on this occasion, there was some real concerns, real worry about him. In the end, the news coming out is that it seems to be a broken jaw, which in the circumstances is, I guess, something you could call a relief. It like, things could be much worse in the situation, and it's an injury that won't impact his playing career long term. I'm sure it ain't falling it nice and is going to sting, and if there needs to be some form of surgery, we don't know, we don't have that information yet. But when a player stretches it off like that and there's such concern around it, it's never nice to see.
It's just not one that I expected to be hearing about. You know, you don't hear about this sort of thing in the league. It's just really, really unfortunate how it's happened. I think he's a lucky boy, to be quite honest. I think the fact that he was off the pitch in the game sort of played on has put a bit of a dark cloud over it, because the guy was receiving some pretty serious treatment, of course. Got a text from a Glentoran supporter during the game about it and all. And it's very, very hard to actually work out what's going on when you're not there. But I'm sure that both Glentoran and Crusaders fans will have seen how serious it actually was and how dire the situation could have actually been.
There was also some pretty ugly scenes off of the pitch. There's been videos floating around. There was an altercation between stewards and Glentoran fans. Look, we'll not get into the details of what went down there. You know, that's up to the authorities to look into further and make their decision. But let's touch on some of the frustrations that there has been, that Crusaders has taken the decision this season to take that stand at the far end of the pitch, kind of just on the corner of the away end. If you're looking at it from the camera, and it's to the right of the camera, and decided to make that stand now a home end stand. It previously used to house away supporters at times, and they've made it a family stand. And there's been frustrations from other supporters. This then limits the amount of fans who are able to go to Seaview. And particularly with the bad weather that was on Saturday, it was a point of frustration for the Glentoran fans. As a supporter that would be going into the away end to Seaview, Are you frustrated that Crusaders' decision to potentially limit the amount of fans that can go and see their team away from home? It's totally up to their discretion. One of the things that fans are irked by is that they're looking at a stand that isn't particularly full. So it's limiting the amount of fans that can go in, and it could provide shelter despite the bad weather, and it means more fans could go. What's your feelings based on Crusaders' decision?
I'll have to say, I'm personally quite annoyed about the decision. It's a bit irritating as an away fan, not knowing what you're going to be able to sit in. I don't particularly like that stand that has been provided for away support. And me personally, when I've been to CV in the past, I've always bought tickets for that stand behind the goal. I don't actually think it's a wonderful stand to watch a game of football in either, to be honest, but it's the lesser of two evils in that situation. Crusaders have their own fans, they have their own ground, of course, so it's their decision. I can totally understand where they're coming from. A lot of other clubs have the ability, you know, to have family sections in grounds and stuff, and that's their way of doing it. That's 100%. But I can totally also see an away fan's frustration in the fact that, you know, you're paying for a ticket and you could be standing basically on the side of a stand with no cover in that pretty terrible rain that was on Saturday. I'm not sure I would have actually, well, definitely wouldn't have fancied standing in that rain on Saturday, but I can see the frustrations, but I can't in any way condone what went on, and it's really not worth going into what happened because it's just not what we want to see.
Let's return to Windsor Park and this one big long season party that it seems to be for David Healy and the Blues. It could have all turned on a dime at halftime after both teams go in 1-1. Was there to be a big comeback from Loughall after it was a Pablo Andrade who got the goal for Loughall? Party time at Windsor Park potentially. But of course, Linfield do what they do, particularly at home. They turn the screw, get the goals. 5-1 it ended. My question for you, Mark, was it a Linfield fan or was it David Healy that signed a Faustian bargain? Because we talked at the start of the season about how they're struggling up top. Their defence is awful and they've got no recruits. Right now, they look like a really solid, complete team. They're getting lots of goals. McKee has come to the fore as one of the best strikers in the league right now. Everything is coming up, Linfield.
It's going very well, isn't it? Very much enjoying this season so far, of course. But I have to say, I don't think anybody could have predicted being this far ahead so early on in the season. There's a long way to go.
Just the 8 points?
Just eight, I know. I don't really want to stick my foot in it at this stage because things do look so rosy and things do look so great at Windsor Park, but there's far too much football to play this season to say that anything is getting engraved onto that Gibson Cup. But I think that we've really hit the jackpot. Chris McKee is turning into the player that I think a lot of Linfield fans wanted him to be. He's getting to shine in so many different ways. I think Cooper's actually improved on another level that he from he was last year. The only real sort of poor points, I would say, Fitzpatrick is really struggling to get a goal, doesn't look the most confident in front of the goal at the minute.
I actually am starting to agree with, I can't credit on who said this to me, but I kind of see what they were saying to me, a random football person, about how Fitzpatrick perhaps wasn't what Linfield required or needed. He maybe wasn't the type of player, and that's why he hasn't really fit in. McKee's been able to play off the shoulder, sneak in, and be this poacher with pace. Yes, you would probably say that Fitzpatrick has that about him, but he's not there that plays particularly fast. He plays where the ball's more slow and he can pick it up out wide, and then he can find his space, and perhaps him not being the absolute number one target playing week in and week out has unsettled him ever so slightly. In the Glenavon team, he was the man up top. Everything went through him, and he does not have that role or has to be that figurehead in that Linfield team. And it'll all come because he has those poacher elements, which McKee has. The ability to score with his head, just find that extra yard in the box and float it in quite easily. So he can knock it in, and perhaps there's just that bit of pressure trying to link up with other players. But for people that aren't seeing Linfield week in and week out, we all know about Cooper and we can see the goals from McKee, but Is there other players that are coming through that are being real difference makers week in and week out? We've talked recently on this podcast about Cam McLean doing bits. Anybody else that we're perhaps not giving enough love and shine to?
If you haven't mentioned Ewan Easton in this podcast, I think I'll break that up for you. If anybody expected Ewan Easton to come in on deadline day of a transfer window where Linfield needed two centre backs and come in and just make himself so prominent in that back four, I think you'd have told him to rise up, because it wasn't meant to be. This was meant to be another jokey Linfield signing. David Healy's unfortunately had quite a few of them in the striker department. Reference Chris Bright and reference Kevin Amuneke and the like.
It's a
All
quiz
these.
question 3 years from now. I go, oh yeah, remember you in
Oh
East?
yeah, it's all those names. You go, oh, remember him? Oh, remember Glenn Balzic? I remember all these guys. But anyway, it wasn't meant to work out. It was meant to be a laugh. It was meant to be, Linfield have done it again, signing nobody. This guy has come in and absolutely strolled it. He has made life look like a walk in the park for him. We needed a centre half to replace Jimmy Callagher. We really did. Probably actually needed a centre half to come in and be at Jimmy Callagher level straight away. And we didn't expect that in Ewan East, but we have found a player, an absolute gem. He is so confident of the ball. He looked, of course, he's confident in defending. I was actually talking to one of the guys who sits beside me. He's going as far to say he's as good, or if not better, than Jimmy Callagher was in his prime. So that's maybe a bit of a jump ahead, but Ewan has definitely pulled it out of the bag. And
That definitely is saying, you know what? After a few weeks, you're definitely fitter than my ex. Absolutely. That's rose tinted glasses. You spent years with this beloved person, but you know what? After a few weeks of a few good games and a few clean sheets, you know what? You're definitely better than that other person that we were beloved for absolutely weeks. Be honest, going in at halftime, I did reference it. We all saw pretty much the only blotch bar the Lauren game on Linfield's copybook being a comeback. Ding dong between yourselves and Carrick Rangers. When Pablo Andrade scores that rocket just on the stroke of half time, when you're going against one of the trickiest kind of in-form teams near the bottom half of the league, was a part of you thinking, oh, not today?
I didn't think so. I think we were, that Carrick game especially, we looked really just not interested. It was a terrible game of football, despite being a 3-3, entertaining for a neutral, but just horrible to watch for me as an Anfield fan. I'm sure wasn't alone. But I didn't really feel that way on Saturday. I felt like we had a lot more to offer on Saturday. We look a lot more settled than we did in those early games against Carrick, and of course, you said Lauren as well. I didn't think that it was going to be an issue. Hats off to Andrade. That was an absolute belter. Just before half time, celebrated in style, of course, in front of the Linfield fans, which got him booked. If you score that goal at Windsor Park, you're gonna go and do that.
And it's something that's just broken as we recorded the podcast. They weren't in the Linfield squad on Saturday, but a statement from Linfield, it's quite short and to the point. They can confirm that players John Robertson and Jack Scott have both left the club by mutual consent with immediate effect. They're gone. They're no longer Linfield players. There's nothing here to say officially on the reasoning behind this. It's fair to say it's highly unusual in this situation. As a Linfield fan, have they been getting a huge amount of minutes for the team? And do you think this potentially leaves them short, regardless of the reasoning that they're no longer a part of the club?
Listen, I didn't really see enough of John Robertson myself to say anything positive about him, to be quite honest. I didn't see.
He was the striker who came in, wasn't he? He was the FC Edinburgh.
Yeah, he came in from Edinburgh City, yeah, I believe. He came in from, well, obviously both players just signed in the summer there, so rather frustrating that two of our summer signings have now departed the club for whatever reason that may be. I think Jack Scott had certainly promising. Started off the season very, very well in more of a wing back position than a left back. He was definitely a wing back for the period that he was playing for the club, and when David Healy was attempting to play a three at the back sort of scenario. I'd say I'm more annoyed with Jack Scott going than Robertson. I don't think Robertson was ever going to break through and be a superstar for Linfield. I suppose we're never going to get the choice to see that, to be quite honest. But I think it's clear and concise from the club that there's no measures taken at Windsor Park. I think that's very clear. Everybody around the club knows where they're at. It's been the same since the days of David Jeffrey. It's been reiterated by David Healy that we're here to win football matches and we're here to do it the right way and we're here to not carry any baggage that's unnecessary. And I think it's the correct decision from both the club and the manager.
Yeah, there's no clear indication or official reporting on what has led to this. You would assume that it's something internal, some sort of disciplinary decision, or again, it was just a mutual decision between the club and we'll just see if and when there's any some sort of official confirmation. Regardless, two players are no longer with the club, and Linfield will march on. All of these amazing results from Linfield has give them what I often talk about in this podcast, slippage. They have the ability to mess up, throw it in, and be on their roller skates in a couple of games and still come out smelling the roses, knowing that they have that gap. That means other teams don't have the ability to let it slip, fall on their face, not get the results when the pressure's on. And a team who did that on Saturday, who avoided that on Saturday, was Cliftonville. Looked to be a tighter affair than other games against Corrine. But once again, it's Ben Wilson who gets the first goal. Truly ghosts in. People talk about players ghosting in at the far end of the box. I mean, he just appeared out of nowhere to get that first goal. McKendry comes back. He's the real bright spark in this Corrine team. But it wasn't enough as the Reds run out. 2-1 winners, get out of Dodge thanks to a Sam Asford second goal. Great results for the Reds. When everything else is going wrong, they're getting the goals to get it done, and they are, it doesn't feel like they're keeping pace. They're not losing tracks at the minute, Cliftonville are.
No, definitely not. I'd say Corrine away is one of the toughest away days in the league. You go up there on any given day and Corrine can make you look like a very average side if they get their way. But I must admit, Cliftonville seem to have pulled it out of the bag. Two goals from two new signings, of course. Everybody knows about Wilson. Everybody knows how good he's been. And everybody knows that Jim McJolton's pulled the wool over everybody's eyes and managed to get him over to the Irish League somehow.
Yeah, but you would think you would track him in the box, so that's what I.
Yeah, and like you should know. And they're like, oh, they've got this guy. Oh, there he is. There's Wilson there. He's scored. Great finish, by the way, at the back post. Really, really good finish.
Yes, there's an I was thinking the same as well. He's got no player around him, but he pretty much takes it on first time, and you know, I would say 5 out of 10 times other players balloon that over the bar, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's over in the industrial estate.
Yeah, that is the type of miss that we're usually talking about, akin to the junior one. You know, he composed himself and hit that in very well.
Yeah, very, very jealous of Cliftonville for having him on their roster. Just gives them that something else that they didn't have for the past couple of years, I must admit. You know, they were relying on maybe a slightly aging Joe Gormley. They were relying on Hale pulling a goal out of somewhere. He really is just that jewel in the crown of Jim McJolton's Cliftonville at the minute. But I have to say, hats off to Ashford as well, of course. Came in from Man United in the summer and is just he's also scored a very good goal. Three very good goals in that game, I'd have to say. Because McKendry's was an absolutely sweet finish as well.
Another diamond that they've been able to secure long term based on the way he's played this season. Rory Hale signed the 2027 this week. I posted on Twitter that this is what you gotta do. You gotta do big boy moves like this. You have a player whose future isn't guaranteed at the club, and the way he is playing at the minute, you gotta lock him down. And he's been such a key part of this team. I'm waxing lyrical about him pretty much every other week on this podcast. It's now good that Cliftonville can now look to the other heel in Ronan Hale, who was playing on Saturday and has been slowly working his way back into the team. And if they can fit both heels into this team and it works and they can keep their flow, then they can somewhat keep this run going.
I think both of them are pivotal to Cliftonville. I have to say, every time the two of them are on, Cliftonville look like a better side. I think there's times that, you know, maybe one hasn't been singing off the same hymn sheet as the other at times. That can happen in any team, of course. Those are situations, especially when you're signing a player for another, what's that, 4-year deal. I don't know how many years that's added on, but of course he'd be there for the next 4 years under contract. These are players that, you know, were maybe dropping out of the, you know, if you wanted to keep a player like that, they might have just slipped away. But I'm sure it's really, really encouraging for the Cliftonville faithful to see one of their nearly really an unsung hero at times committing his future to the club. I'm sure they're very, very happy with that.
What about this Corrine side? I talked last week just about the despair that a lot of their fans are feeling. I know that a lot of Korean fans will say this is not a surprise. They've seen this coming. At the minute, they just look like a lot of individuals that aren't working together. And I think they are just lacking that leader, that bit of experience down the spine of this team. They have so many high-flying, exciting threats, but every time they're potentially whizzing up top, it's missing Wilson at the back post. It's letting Malin dance through your defensive line. You can be as exciting as you can up top, but they just do not have the steel in midfield or defense to have any impact on the top of this division. They will shine, absolutely. They will have great weeks in the same way that they were able to get the result against Glentoran at the Oval. But right now, week to week, they are faltering against bottom six sides, and it's like a flip of the coin. Are you going to have a Korean team that's going to run all over you, or is it going to be a team that just can't get it going up front and they are just shipping goals at the back?
Yeah, you know, you've seen, I think, and everybody has seen the you know, the real mixed bag that Korean have turned up with this year. You know, you go to the Oval and you win 2-1 and you think, you know, maybe this is a step in the right direction. And then you've also seen results like 4s and 5-0s against Cliftonville and Crusaders. It's just a real, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. It's like that life's a box of chocolates and all that, but it doesn't really help in football. Even the day that we went up there, probably been the only time I've seen Korean this season. They never really looked, when they scored the goal, they never really looked like, we're going to grasp this game with both hands and we're going to drag ourselves to a win in front of our fans here. It just looked like a team that was just down in spirits nearly. It looks to be, I don't know, from the outside looking in, is it a team of individuals that just can't get it clicking as a team? You know, we're used to talking about Lyndon Kane and how influential he's been. He's been nowhere near the quality and the standard that he has been in seasons gone by. I wouldn't be so sure where the answer is at Korean anymore, to be quite honest.
Well, talking about teams who you just don't know who's going to turn up week on week, we'll have to look at this Carrick Rangers side. I predicted it last week that as soon as you think Carrick Rangers are going to do something good, they go against one of the worst sides in the league at home against a team with a new-ish manager who hasn't got a win under his tutelage. And what do? They ship 3 goals and lose the game. This Carrick team are blowing Arctic and then they're blowing Sahara Desert. Like, it's just so polar opposite. It's infuriating if you're a fan of the team. And for Glenavon, they finally got a win under coach Steve McDonnell. And thanks to the big names, you just haven't been showing up this season so far for them. 2 pile drivers from Peter Campbell is then wrapped up thanks to a Niall Quinn, a curler in the box. So, you know, for all Carrick Rangers firepower, they're just leaking at the back, and they're a team that don't particularly like to chase games. When you view them, you see if they go down by a goal or two, it's pretty much they're out. This is a team who need to hold on to the lead rather than chase it. That isn't for every single game. I'm sure you could find many examples when Carrick Rangers have come back, but on the whole, they are getting pinned back and they just don't have the ability to break down a team that's defending for their lives. And huge win for Glenavon. I don't think it's going to change too much for them. This needs to be the start. This isn't the solution right now.
Yeah, even when you see the celebrations from Campbell and the rest of the team when that first goal goes in, you can actually see almost the relief when that first goal went in. And of course, they had a full, you know, whatever to play in the game. It was first half. So you could just see how much it meant to them. And I'm sure that that's a real positive for the Glenavon fans who have stuck by them through this really, really tough period. You know, any team that changes a manager of such a long tenure, it's going to be a really, really difficult time for them.
Yeah, the problem is with Glenavon is that the big players that you would name, and let's put it right, as you said, on paper, the Campbells, the Quinn, like, not Quinn's been injured, but, you know, players like Peter Campbell, who were, you know, have been starlets for them in times gone by, he has been absent from scoring goals, impacting games. If one of the things for McDonald, while he has to play with players that he hasn't chosen, he has to try and get the best out of the players that are game changers, and it's a team that doesn't have a whole lot of game changers. So to get Peter Campbell's season up and running in the way they hope they finally have, is the true bright spark coming out of this game. But they are having to rely on the likes of Prendergast and maybe the likes of McCloskey up front, which is really not his position. You know, they don't have the firepower, so they're going to have to try and find it from elsewhere. And I think that's the frustrating thing from a Carrick Rangers point of view, to flip to them, is that they're a team just bursting with firepower. And I know the conditions were absolutely horrid on Saturday, but particularly against these bottom six sides, they need to start blowing these teams away and not let them get at them the way they did. Saying that, what a great goal from Curtis Allen, the little pullback from him.
Oh, lovely. Lovely goal. It's one of those ones that you manage to score at five a side when there's about 5 minutes to go when everybody else is wrecked. It's one of those ones that you get away with. But I don't know. I don't know where it's going wrong. I it's very, very difficult to place from the outside looking in. You know, that squad, it looks, you know, decent. It's not a poor, you know, there's not a real weakness that you could name, you know, two, three players where you'd say, oh, he's maybe not good enough, or he's maybe not at the level where they could be pushing on. But it's definitely a top half of the bottom half side for sure. I don't think they're going to be in any danger of getting relegated. I don't think there's any going to be any relegation playoffs going to be played at Taylor's Avenue anytime soon. But as you say, I really think they just need to just get a bit of consistency, because you know they went down to Windsor Park, got a really, really good draw. Another player who I really admire is Maculatis. I think he is an absolute star, but just isn't shining as bright because he's in behind that top goal scorer for Carrick, I think, Danny Purkis. I don't know why the Glens let him go, by the way.
Well, I'll say this: another player that was let go by Glentoran is a player who capped off what you have to admit now, based on what we've seen this season, was a classic Carrick performance. You lose at home to a bottom six side, and you top it off with a nailed on red card, which is what Joe Crowe did when he dived in and got himself sent off late in the game. So, Carrick Rangers once again go back to the drawing board, trying to see how they can make this a more consistent week to week team. Here was a massive game for both teams, and looking back at it was two teams who are not very good playing against each other. They showed their lack of quality in this game. I'm talking about Ballymena against Dungannon. A win here for either of them at the Ballymena Showgrounds would have really propelled them forward, give them a bit of a boost going into all these games where the floodlights are going to be on just after half time. It's going to be even colder, even wetter, and they're going to have to really dig in. And this is two teams who just could not string attacking players together, and two somewhat ugly goals. Like the Westendorf goal for Ballymena, it ends 1-1, was like a thump, and based on a late chance for him in the game, like it could have gone anywhere. And on this occasion, luckily for him, it went into the goal. But two teams who really do not have a lot of flair on offer.
I'd say it was probably the definition of a six-pointer, that game up at Ballymena on Saturday. From what I've seen, Ballymena looked to have a really, really good start, couple of good chances. Westendorf's goal, as you said, just they just wellied it. I think that's the definition of just wellying it.
Yeah, he thumped it, and it went down right in past the goalkeeper, close to that post. But like I said, I've seen him fire that wide of either side of the post, and look, he's strong and he's great in the channels. But it's like a little, you know, eight ball when you roll with him. You kind of shake it and go, oh, goal, oh, ballooned it over.
Yeah, could have very easily ended up on that stock car track and behind the goal there at Ballymena, no problem at all. Could have ended up over that, to be fair. I think he looks like a player. Like, you know, he look he's it's all there.
Yes.
You know, the abilities there, the strengths there, the paces there, the powers there. It's just getting that all the time. I'm sure that's something, well, some part of the reason that Lauren have sent him out on loan, because there's a player in there, 100%. It's just getting it to be a consistent player. I think that's where it's going to be really, really positive for him being on loan at Ballymena this season.
Well, another Lauren Loney was the creator for that Dungannon goal, look, it goes down as a pretty rough watch back for Lewis Tennant of Ballymena, who knocks it into his own goal. But it's thanks to the endeavour of one Matthew Lustie, who's able to chase down and bully Corey Burns off the ball, off a pretty rough looking Ballymena pass back from McCullough to his back line. And like I said, these are two teams where once they got up into the final third, they just didn't know what to do with it. And look, they're at the bottom of the leagues, they're lacking quality. And I don't know if this game really tells us anything about these two teams, bar the fact that they will be struggling pretty much between now and May.
Yeah, I think that goal had shades of Gareth McCauley one against Wales in the Euros.
Oh.
There wasn't much the boy could do with it. Like, Lewis Tennant was really stuck between a rock and a hard place. Like, it was just really, really unfortunate for him. You don't like to see that happen, doesn't it? Really does happen. I have to say, Lusty was absolutely flying in behind there. Ballymena defence, like, the concrete in their boots. It was really, really, just good goal.
Before we get into Larne against Newry, we'll just kind of pause and look at the table ever so slightly, because you know we've talked there about Dungannon against Ballymena. You know, we talk about Glenavon getting that big win after an awful winless run. Larne come back to get a 2-1 win against Newry, but if looking at the table right now, we have a clear bottom four right now, and going from 9 to 12, it's Ballymena, Glenavon, Newry, and then the Swifts now go to bottom after Glenavon going bottom last week after the Ballymena win. That win for the Lurgan Blues gets them off bottom, and now it's Dungannon with only the one win. They'll draw like it's going out of fashion, but they're just not getting wins at the minute, and they have 9 points. Newry and Glenavon have, and Ballymena all have 10 now. You know, Carrick are only hovering above them on 13, but as I've said in this podcast, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, they have the goals that other teams don't seem to have. Carrick on a 3-match losing streak. For you, do you see any of those four teams breaking away over the next couple of weeks or months, or do you think that's going to be a battle between those teams between now and the end of the season?
I don't see it happening anytime soon. Out of those teams, from what I have seen, I would say that Newry have probably got the best chance of doing it. I think Newry have, I think they have more in their arsenal than a lot of those other teams, especially with, you know, players returning and stuff from injury. It could solve a lot of problems for Newry, who obviously have got a new manager as well. So it's going to be very, very difficult to get that ball rolling. I don't think that any of these teams have it in them to pull away just yet. If Glenavon start, you know, if they build on that result against Carrick, you know, they've got a couple of six-pointers in a row, really. Actually, I would say all four of them. If they win two or three of these upcoming games, they'll be very, very happy at the end of November, because things do not look good for them in December. So they really do have to push on now for me if Glenavon are going to get out of it.
All four of these teams have somewhat new managers. Ballymena, Newry and Dungannon changed things up during the summer. Glenavon obviously changed up a couple of weeks ago from Gary Hamilton. I totally agree with you when it comes to the goals for Newry. I think that's a threat that they have more consistently than the other teams. I think I would say now that it's going to be, obviously I'm talking about a third of the division here, but one of these teams will not be in the league next season. I think that's pretty clear. Whoever it is, your mileage will vary. Sticking with Newry right now, they score a goal thanks to a big set piece. Adam Sally's the man to jump on it. Then Larne go down to 10 men on a torrid day down at the Newry Showgrounds. The pitch was soggy. Then Larne, I've got it all to do. Was this going to be another one of these poor results the likes we've seen against Dungannon and a wedlock goal? But up step one of the forgotten men on this team, Joe Thompson, scoring two excellent goals, a quick fire burst and a double, and he's the man to seal the points. That is a get out of jail free card if I've ever seen one.
I'd say what Newry Showgrounds is one of those places where you dread going. They can pile in at the back, they can make things very, very difficult and awkward for you, and it can become a very, very big slog of a game. And I would say the weather definitely didn't help on Saturday night. Saturday evening, of course, being probably one of the wettest we've had this season so far. I was very, very happy when Adam Sally scored, and I was actually driving for most of the second half, and then he gets stopped and Larne somehow pulled it out of the bag with 10 men.
thought I would hit you up with a bit of news, as we sometimes do before we get into the games coming up this weekend. Just a thought, as someone who frequents the National Stadium on a more regular basis than myself. Interesting article in the Belfast Telegraph over the past week. It was from David Jeffrey, still talking, still reflecting on the situation with Kisham Park and Windsor Park and the Euros coming here, fingers crossed, potentially in 2028. Interestingly, within the article, within the piece, he talks about how he believes when they came down to redevelop Windsor Park, what should have happened was Linfield get a bespoke, smaller stadium that suits them, and then you could have a separate national stadium. He didn't get into the logistics of where, how, etc., etc., but I know this idea has been talked about before. Thank goodness this article means I can bring it up here, chatting to a Linfield fan. Mark, is this still something that gets brought up by Linfield fans? Do you think that actually Linfield would benefit from... And this, of course, I'm not going to hide the irony here. This is in the same week where Linfield have pretty much announced that they've sold like three ends of Windsor Park for Boxing Day. Like, they've sold thousands of tickets for that game. But the idea of Midgley Park XL or the real new Windsor Park, is this an idea that's been talked about? What do you think about it?
There's obviously been, I don't know whether everybody's privy to this sort of conversation, but there's been rumours and murmurings of talk with building a new stadium down in Beaver direction. That's something that has always been touted, you know, something in around like a 5,000-6,000 seater stadium. Benefit-wise, Linfield, I would say, would improve the atmosphere 100%. Very, very difficult to create an atmosphere in an 18,000-seater stadium when there's maybe only 2,000 there. A 6,000-seater stadium probably suits the league a bit better. It's been a very, very long time since we've seen a sold-out, even an Irish Cup final. It's been a very long time since that has happened. But I think it's sort of like moving away from your family home, isn't it? You know, you've been there forever, and maybe there's been some renovations done by your mum and you just don't really like what she's done with the place, and it's not quite the way you remember it. But to me, it's still home. You know, there's so many memories of that pitch, and, you know, so many good memories of lifting so many trophies, seeing so many good players as well. But I just don't think that there's much point in moving. I really don't. You know, we have proven this week that we have the biggest support in the country. And I must say hats off to the marketing team at Linfield, because they have nearly sold those tickets themselves. An absolutely phenomenal effort from every side of that team and behind closed doors at Windsor. It's really, really positive to see. The team's playing well, so that means there'll be fans there, and I think that's great. But on movement-wise, I don't really think that it's something that will happen in the near future.
Right, okay. There's only one place to start. That is on Friday night, Cliftonville against Larne. It's going to be streamed so we can all see it. This is an interesting fixture because all signs point to this being another knockdown, drag-out draw, and Linfield are just sitting laughing as both teams wreck each other, get red cards, and ruin themselves for the future. The one thing I think what will happen is goals, which probably means there won't be any, but despite how brilliant Larne are at home on Friday nights, I kind of like a bit of Cliftonville right here, right now.
It seems to be a very, very tight one, to be quite honest. Can't recall a time when the two of them have been, you know, so neck and neck and just battling for the same position. You know, the last year, of course, Larne blew Cliftonville away a couple of times. Certainly looked like a much stronger team than Cliftonville, but this year I would say that both are pretty level pegging. Course level on points in second and third. I think Cliftonville are just ahead on goal difference, so it's going to be a really tasty one, as you say. But under the lights in Larne, it's usually only one outcome, to be quite honest, and it does usually end up with Tiernan Lynch rubbing his hand and saying there's another 3 points. I just don't know how it's going to go. Personally, of course, I would really like a draw. Does suit me very, very well going into, of course, a trip to Newry on Saturday. Cliftonville just haven't had the fortune down at Inver Park. From my research, they haven't beat them down there since about 2010, by the looks of it. So it's been a long, long time. Of course, Lauren out of the league for a little while, of course, but just can't see past Lauren in my own head.
See, I'm slightly different. I feel like Lauren have shown that they are a bit loosey-goosey at the back. They don't have the same kind of controlling, dominating midfield that can dictate games and dictate play. And this was quite an even affair when they met earlier on in the season down at Solitude. And I just think the way Lauren are going, they're not going to keep a clean sheet, famous last words. And I think Gryffindor will capitalize on that. With that, they'll get the goals. It just depends how many Lauren will respond with. Lauren have been getting a few goals themselves, but I think this game and Lauren's fortunes will rest very much on the shoulders of Lee Bonus. If he's able to get on the ball, dictate play, get goals, and constantly hem in Gryffindor and put them under pressure, they will be better for it. I know Lauren are an underrated counter-attacking side, and to be honest, teams don't usually give them enough space behind that they can do that. But if Gryffindor get the goals that I think they will do, it'll be up to a player like Bonus, I think, to get the goals back. Look, Joe Thompson could have another flyer. We could see Miller produce an excellent performance, or there's lots of great attacking play from there. And Cosgrove is having a low key, pretty nice run. But I'm gonna say 3-2 to the Reds.
Brave, brave.
And a thriller for us all to
Love to see
enjoy.
it. That's Friday nights. That's what it's all about, of course. Yeah, I can't see past Lauren, to be honest, Peter. 2-1 Lauren for me.
I cannot see past Crusaders this Saturday when they host Coleraine. I could see a draw perhaps if Coleraine can hold up and stand firm, and Crusaders have an off day up front, which they have proved they can very much dish up. It's just about if Heatley and Leckie and everybody else is a blunt day, because I it would be another turn up for the books for Coleraine to get two or three goals thanks to the likes of Glacken and everybody else, McKendry. And McKendry's turned out to show that he has the ability to be an absolute devil in the box as a lead man, compared to just constantly coming out wide. That they'll need him in these top six games for them to change things up. But Crusaders look more assured. They have got more experience. They feel like a stronger, more imposing team. And I'm gonna back them to get the win.
I can't say anything but that myself, to be quite honest. The Crews have defeated Coleraine 6 in the last 7 meetings. That's both home and away. Coleraine haven't actually won at Seaview since October 2021. So it's been a good while since they have a nice day on the Shore Road. But another big, big aspect of that, I would say, is the lack of Shevlin for Coleraine. I'm assuming that suspension's still ongoing. You never quite know in the Irish League, of course, how long a suspension might be or whether there's a gap in it or whatever. But even the way that both teams have played this season, as you just said there, I think Crusaders have good maybe 60, 70, 80% chance of winning this game. Maybe missing Josh Robinson could lead to a few issues at the back for the Crews, but I'm sure that they've got a certain Billy Joe Burns who could slip in the centre half if required, of course.
I think the destiny of this game all rests on the shoulders of Crusaders. They will either be the architects of their own downfall here, or they will blow Corrin out of the water. I just think they're just that impactful on it. Here's another weird, tricky game. It is another chance to see the meeting of Glentoran against Carrick Rangers. Is it a different result when you go down to the Oval? I don't know, but I have to say, despite Carrick Rangers being a bit of a thorn in the side of top six sides this season, I think Glentoran will have the goals in them to win out here at home, particularly.
Yeah, especially after the poor result on Saturday for both teams, actually. Not really what either team expected or wanted, considering the situations that they were both in. I would suggest that the Glens have probably got a lot more than Carrick, to be quite honest. Strange one, if Carrick can somehow come out of the Oval with a point on Saturday. I can't really see it in any shape or form, to be honest. I think the Glens should beat them by at least 2 or 3 goals, to be honest. Stuart King will have to pull off something very, very special for them to even being with a snip of a chance on Saturday afternoon.
Or Perkis will have a hat trick without even entering the Glentoran half. You just do not know. Another fun little meeting on Saturday is Loughgall against Ballymena United. We discussed last week about how Ballymena have this gauntlet of fun after the gauntlet of misery that was at the start of the season, and they're going to have to make it count. I saw this reverse fixture at the Showgrounds earlier on this season. Ballymena were able to get a goal, and then Loughgall turned up massively in the second half. And I think it would be. And it's amazing to say, but it really shows the fortunes of both teams this season. I think it would be a turn up for the books if Loughall don't get a win here at home. They've started to falter ever so slightly. They're feeling all their aches and pains, and they've particularly been shipping goals. Now, they've been shipping goals to top six sides, it's fair to say, but I'll not forget that Carrick Rangers loss at home where they could knock it in to the opposition net, but they couldn't keep it out of their own. The one thing you got to not worry about with Ballymena is that if Ballymena are going to win, it's not going to be by a whole host of goals. So I say, Loughall, score two, and you're probably winning.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there, to be quite honest, Peter. Both sides, it's a six pointer, 100%. Ballymena could come away with that in a very, very good position, considering who the teams around them are playing. Of course, there's another six pointer that we'll chat about in a wee minute or two. This is a game where Loughgall are really free to just go and, show everybody how good they are in spells, and games they've looked really, really, not out of place in the Irish League at all. The last couple of games up in Belfast haven't gone so well for them, of course, shipping quite a few goals against both Linfield and Glentoran. But to be quite honest, I'm sure it's been said by so many other people, Loughgall's season will not be defined by their results on away trips to Belfast. And I really think that Loughgall, they have it in them to beat Ballymena for sure. I think, as so many people have said, that pitch at Lakeview is such a positive for them. They're able to command every square inch of that grass down at Lakeview, and I think that it's got the makings of Loughgall defeating Ballymena, I think, for sure.
I'm going to say 2-1 to Loughall here. I think they need to come out of this quickly. Don't let this become sort of end-to-end game. Don't let Ballymena try and catch you on the break. I'm going to say 2-1, and I strangely think Ballymena are going to get a penalty there. The other game you're referring to, another big basement battle matchup, is Dungannon against Glenavon. This is an interesting game because it feels very similar to the Dungannon game last weekend. It's Glenavon who's hosting this at Moranview Park, and it's easy to say that they'll feel buzzed after the Carrick Rangers game, and I think they will. But when they know how much is on offer, this truly is whoever gets a win here, if there is a win, it will put distance between them and a significant rival down at the bottom, and Gannon have looked better away from home this season, but again, they're not showing me anything to say that they've got it in them to break down Glenavon. So it's easy to say a draw here, but I feel like this is going to be like I often talk about how if I saw all these games on one big massive TV with five little screens and I could pick my main game, I already think this one would be it because there's just so much on the line, and I not that this is a score prediction, but I think there'll be like shenanigans. I think there'll be like a weird decision or a red card or some sort of weird offside decision. I just don't see this being a really bog standard 2-0 win without some sort of jeopardy or hijinks at the end of the game where one manager is very annoyed. That's my prediction. 1-0 with some very annoyed manager at the end of it.
I don't think there's an Irish League game that goes by without some sort of shenanigans going on. I think we all know that this league is famous for something crazy happening in the most basic of circumstances, and that's why we all love it, I think. But I can totally see where you're coming from. It does have that very, very plain and basic, oh, this will be a draw. Both teams are, really struggling, and neither team have really hit any sort of heights this season. So I can really see it going that way. Or, as you said, something crazy going on could also be part of the story down at Lurgan on Saturday. So I think there's goals in it, though. I don't think either team has a very, very solid defence or a really strong midfield. It's just going to be a real, real ding dong battle down there on Saturday. I'm going to go for 2-2, to be quite honest. I think I can't split the two teams, both similar levels.
I think the fact that Dungannon are away from home means there's a bit less pressure on them and they'll be a bit more of an incentive to play a bit more risks, try a few more things out, and I think Glenavon will feel slightly under the cosh, the fans knowing what's on the line. So I'm going to predict that Dungannon sneak it, but I don't think it'll be by a lot. And finally, the Linfield game is also a part of this little trove of games at 3 o'clock. The Newry Showgrounds is the venue. Can they do what they weren't able to do against Larne? Hold out and get a win. I can't see it myself, but if Linfield are going to slip up, you've got to think it's going to be away from home at the minute. I think we've seen this all before. Go within the first 20 minutes and then the other team's playing catch up.
Yeah. Even on Saturday, I said to my brothers, Simon, I just said, you know, if we get an early goal here, there's only one way this is going. We were lucky enough to get it right on the ninth minute, I believe. It was down as, of course, that massive deflection didn't really help Turker in that situation. But I think that the Blues should edge this Saturday. As I said, Newry's quite a difficult place to go sometimes, and Larne certainly saw how difficult it can be at times, you know, when they, you know, when they sit back and they're able to fight on through in situations. But I think the Blues just have more quality than they'll need to go down to Newry and get a win. And I can't see anything but a 3-0 win.
Newry have struggled at the back, particularly this season, and I think you've seen that they struggled both times with those crosses coming in against Larne there, and I just can see Miller and Ben Cooper causing havoc down the wings on the higher third of the pitch for Linfield. So yeah, I think they'll definitely have enough to get the win. Mark, it's been a pleasure, I'm sure, not only for me, but other fans of Irish League Podcast, to hear you once again behind a microphone sharing your musings. I'm sure they're already a follower of your thoughts and feelings online, but where can people link up to the McGuigan mainframe for more Irish League thoughts and feelings?
Yeah, you can find me giving off about David Healy's managerial decisions, just usually on Twitter. Handle is Mark MCGUI99AM. Very catchy. So just search my name, should come up there. Thanks for having me on, Peter. Really appreciate it.
It's great to have you back on. I look forward to chatting to you very, very soon. Until next time, thank you very much. Another one in the can. Thank you so much for listening once again this week. If you happen to be one of the people that joined the little follow club on Spotify, I very much appreciate it. Or on Apple Podcasts, thank you very much. I hit my little round number. I showed it to my wife, and I'm not saying she wasn't impressed. She was just like, good for you. I don't know. I thought I was going to get, you know, a big cup of tea or something fun to celebrate, but it was just a big thumbs up. But look, I'm happy. I appreciate that there's hundreds of you there that are part of this club. And if you haven't joined the little club, you can do that now. You can follow on Spotify. You can follow this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Good thing to do. So that means you get a little notification saying, hey, Peter has finally uploaded this podcast. Another fun club you can join is my Twitter club, my Instagram club, not really clubs, maybe Facebook if you want to. It's all at Kicking Match there. That's the words you want to do that. You know, if you want to make this hands-free, I don't know, you've got like a load of Halloween makeup still on your fingers and you can't touch your device, you can just go, hey, smart speaker, please play Kicking Match and Irish League Podcast. You can do that. Perhaps you're like sitting back and listening to an audiobook. I've randomly got back into like Stephen King books at the minute. I've got like another one sitting here. I've got Salem's Lot like staring at me over here. So like, I don't know, if you are still listening to the podcast right now and you happen to be like a big fan of Stephen King's books, let me know, and let me know which one I should read, because there's definitely a lot more out there that I haven't read than I have. So yeah, I don't know, maybe this can become like a little book club at the end of the podcast for like 5 minutes. That probably sounds like an awful idea. Let's wait for an Irish League book and maybe we'll do it then. Until next time, thank you for listening. I'll see you next week. Tally-ho.